Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you what the future holds for Urban Meyer.
And heavyweight champ of the world, Deontay Wilder, will be here to talk about his controversial draw with Tyson Fury. But we start every day with a Whitlock. What you got today, big dog?
All right, mastering the game of football often comes down to mastering your ego. Can you balance confidence and humility? Doug Peterson and the Philadelphia Eagles couldn't.
I heard that.
That's why they're 6-6 and unlikely to reach the playoffs 1 year after winning the Super Bowl with their backup quarterback. Yes, last night Carson Wentz threw for 300 yards in a 28-13 rout of the Redskins. Yes, the Eagles are now riding their first winning streak of the season into an NFC East showdown with the Cowboys this Sunday. Yes, the Eagles beat Dallas. If the Eagles beat Dallas, they'll be tied with the boys at 7-6 atop the NFC East. But it's too late for the Philadelphia Eagles. They've eaten their humble pie too late in the season. Peterson adjusted Philly's playing style too late to save this season. After winning the Super Bowl in his second season and doing it with a backup quarterback, Peterson and his players fell in love with themselves. They looked over at Bill Belichick's no-nonsense approach and decided Philly's one Super Bowl ring trumped New England's five. It started at the Eagles' Super Bowl parade when center Jason Kelce told everyone who doubted the Eagles, F you.
If you love the Eagles, let me get a hell yeah. Hell yeah. You love the Philadelphia Eagles, let me get a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Jason Kelce's too small. Lane Johnson can't lay off the juice. Brandon Brooks has anxiety.
Then right tackle Lane Johnson spent the offseason doing my job, criticizing Bill Belichick and the Patriots. Johnson said Belichick runs a fear-based organization and the team is no fun. Everybody in the Eagles organization published a book during the offseason, including free agent signee Michael Bennett. The Philadelphia Eagles transformed themselves into the Philadelphia Eagles. Can you blame them? They won a Super Bowl with their backup quarterback. Carson Wentz was going to win the MVP in 2017 before his knee injury. The reigning Super Bowl champs were going to add an MVP quarterback this season. It was all going to be easy. Peterson and Wentz were going to be the second coming of Bill Walsh and Joe Montana. Well, it's looking more like Mike Martz and Kurt Warner 2.0.
Lord.
You know, Martz and Warner never won another Super Bowl after Dick Vermeil left as head coach. Pass-happy Peterson has had to dial back his passing game to get the Philly train back on track. A month ago on Thursday Night Football, the Cowboys beat Philadelphia on a night when Peterson abandoned his running game yet again. The next week, the Saints brutalized Philadelphia 48-7 with a balanced attack. Philly has won the last 2 weeks by de-emphasizing Wentz and establishing a ground game. This formula may beat the Cowboys this Sunday, but the following weeks, Philly plays the Rams and the Texans. The Eagles choked on their own egos a long time ago. All right, joining the desk now are Fox NFL analysts Tony Gonzalez and D'Angelo Hall. Marcellus, start with you. I blame the Philadelphia Eagles.
Ego. Let go of my ego.
Yeah. For the 6-6 mediocre season. That's what's the problem. That's what's been the problem with the Philadelphia Eagles.
And that's conventional thinking. That is the way that most people will look at this and title this season thus far. You look at this team, and it could be simple. It could be lazy at times to just say, Super Bowl hangover, therefore you're a 6-6 ball club. But I want to disagree with that sentiment, and I want to dive deeper into why do you think it's their ego, as we define ego as your view of your own importance and esteem. So you're the Super Bowl champions. You should think pretty highly of yourself. So that's one. I'm looking at this team. They came back, and they weren't full of themselves. Other teams were fully motivated against them. Remember, this is the underdog team that won the Super Bowl. So now everyone has woke up to the fact that you are now the champs, and we are coming fully motivated, full throttle at your head. What happens? Oh, my quarterback is not the same quarterback that even led us to the Super Bowl, and he's coming off an injury. Everyone knows in football circles it takes 2 years to fully recover from an ACL. So he's going out there. Yeah, he's medically cleared, but in the same breath, not the same guy. What happens after that? You see this team not finding itself because they're trying to abbreviate their philosophy based on their quarterback and his health. And then now they got the running game in tow. Now they're getting healthy. You saw Darren Sproles back out there. But let's just stay focused on the ego part. The team that wins the championship the most are the New England Patriots. You want to talk about ego? Let's talk about a team that has an owner that wears Jordans with his tux. That's an ego. I love me some Bob Kraft Columbia football, but that's an ego. A quarterback that lives a bigger lifestyle than LeBron James. You could call that an ego a little bit. Julian Edelman and all his little off-the-field issues, we're going to let that live. And then Gronkowski partying and going on cruises and boats and every nightclub slam dancing. But we're going to sit there and say the Patriot way is egoless football. I beg to differ, and I don't think the Philadelphia Eagles were fooling themselves.
Patriots don't talk all that smack.
Oh, look at him. That's all you're going to say.
Hey, look, Marcellus is a little bit too nice. I just think this Eagles team is not very good. I didn't think they were that great last year. I think they had a miracle run, that everything was going right for them. Even when their starting quarterback, who's having an MVP season, is hurt, and then you bring in Nick Foles, who I gave him no chance at winning. I thought the defense was still very good, but I just did not think Nick Foles would be able to operate this offense at a high level and get them to a Super Bowl championship. And so you just couple all those things in there, and I just don't think this team was really that good from the jump. I think they just had the perfect storm where everything was going their way, where the ball was bouncing their way. They were getting calls. Guys were playing amazing football. You think about their secondary, who we're saying is the weakness this year. They weren't very good last year either. And so it was just a perfect storm for them. I don't think it has anything to do with their egos at this point. I just think that they're not really that great a football team.
Yeah, I agree with you. Momentum is big. And yes, when you get that confidence, it's lightning in a bottle and you can get on a roll. But I go back to the New England Patriots, and I agree with you. I think it is ego. I think it is something. It's success is so hard to handle. And that is why the New England Patriots are the best in the business of all professional sports, because they don't get into that. Nothing wrong with ego. Yes, you talked all about the partying and Tom, and they do all that stuff. But still, when it comes down to it, football is at the top of the list. It's the most important thing. That's why Bill Belichick doesn't get caught up in drama. Thielen and him getting that argument in the game last week, and they start jawing about it. You know, they asked Belichick, what happened? He said, well, it's just two competitive guys going at it. That's it. Next question, right? That's all. Thielen talked 15 minutes on it because he don't have time. Belichick does not have time for drama. Football, it's all about winning, and that's it. And everything comes second. Family, business, book writing, everything else. And I think when you keep that at the top of the list, that's when you become consistent. And that's the hallmark of greatness.
That's unfair. That's unfair, because the construction of this team that actually won the Super Bowl is not the same team you rolled out week one the next year. So in traditional terms, when you say Super Bowl hangover, you're really talking about a carryover of the same team. They had to insert their starting franchise quarterback, who's at 60-70%, and then say go out there and duplicate what you did last year. Finish that momentum off, despite having 9 months off and parades and really feeling all the love and attention. That's a different course than the traditional Super Bowl hangover.
Look, I've never seen what Jason Kelce did at that parade. We've never seen it. Lane Johnson then to come out and start attacking the gold standard in the NFL, Bill Belichick. That's stuff me and you should do sitting on TV, not when we in the fire with these guys. And so we've never seen this kind of explosion of ego. And I like D'Angelo's point, because I think it serves my point. They weren't that good.
All right.
And they got full of themselves. Yeah, and now they're getting spanked. and they're 6-6 and look mediocre and going to be in a dogfight with Dallas for this division.
New England Patriots, they go through that same stuff, though. They have injuries, guys get suspended, the steroids. They have the starting quarterback go down. Tom Brady gets hurt. They still win 11 games.
And no playoffs.
It's no playoffs, but they're still successful. I'm just saying, this is how much I love Bill Belichick. Right. I love Bill Belichick. I can picture him. He doesn't – I was talking about – to my wife this morning, we got in a little argument, and she wants to keep going, but you guys are married, right?
Yeah.
So you know
what? Well, hell no, not with
you. Well, this is what you do. If you ever do get married, at least my wife, they want to keep going back and forth, back and forth. I'm like, I thought we were done with this. Why do we got to keep talking it? Like, you win then. And I think Belichick's like that. He don't want to keep talking about the drama. He does not like drama. And if you got drama, he's going to get rid of you. And that's why I think they're so consistent. They deal with the same stuff that every other team in the NFL deals with.
That's my point. But that's to my point as well. They deal with the same things. They step in it like everyone else. So to blame the hangover effect on this team when we don't blame it on other teams. It's just a result-based conversation. And look, we don't know the results of this team this year. They can still win this division. There they go. I said that last year. I was not believing in the Eagles.
Zero chance to win the division.
If they beat Dallas this week.
And they will have the same record, but they still have zero chance to win the division.
Okay, you're saying that, but that doesn't mean
because they have the Texans and the Rams.
I get it. Look, last year you're going to have to tell me we didn't work together, but I was not on the Eagles bandwagon. And every step of the way, I was eating crow. I'm not sure what this team's mentality is, but if they like being underdogs, they're back in that same position that galvanized them last year. Who knows?
I hope they win 3 out of the last 4 against the Cowboys, the Rams, the Texans. And the Eagles.
Did you see the Cowboys beating the Saints?
But hold up. The Cowboys have the Eagles, the Colts, the Bucks. Eagles, Colts, Bucks, and Giants.
You making that mistake we all make, which is look at the schedule, get a pen out, and say,
schedule
God,
does matter.
I've been in that locker room.
The Cowboys saw the Saints, and you know what the schedule said for them?
I know.
Guess what happened?
W.
I know
what the schedule said. Yes, it can happen. Anything can happen. That's why we play these games.
Yeah.
But if you had to bet your life on the Eagles making the playoffs right now, what would you do?
I'll say, let me wait to this game against the Cowboys and then I'm gonna bet my life after that.
Let's stay right there then. Yeah. Do you believe the Eagles are gonna beat the Cowboys this weekend? Keep it real.
That sounds like a no to me. It's a no with trepidation because they have played themselves into a competition argument where I'm like, anything can happen. Before last night, I would have said Cowboys are going to beat them. They're riding too much of a high. The defense is playing too well. Mm-hmm. Dak is starting to feel himself. Mari Cooper in that relationship. But then I saw the Cowboys beat the Saints in a game that no one saw come except Jason Whitlock.
And Bucky Brooks.
Y'all both making headlines. So then I saw that, and then I'm like,
you're both right.
What you were. Now I think the Eagles can do the same thing. Remember, when you're playing a divisional foe, one thing you have inherently is confidence. You're never out of a divisional game because you're familiar with your opponent.
At the end of the day, even if they win that game, the Eagles could beat the Cowboys. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Right.
Yes. They're 7-6 now. They both have the same records. So now at that point, they have to go to LA and face the Rams.
Right here.
And they go, and the Texans come to them. Can they win both of them?
The Rams one's going to be the most difficult. But, hey, the Rams are in. Right now playing great, but not exactly.
Let me win this fight.
Not exactly
unbeatable. Let me win this fight.
They can beat the Texans.
Let me win this fight. There was a 33-year-old man last night that ran 90 yards straight downfield, and there wasn't one Eagles player that could even go get it. He was moving away from them. Not one Eagles player. 90 yards, a 33-year-old man. What do you think Zeke is going to do this week? And that man only had one run. The rest of them
were going. He didn't even get 100 yards.
He only had 9 carries.
What do you think Zeke is going to do? They're going to shove Zeke down that defense. An old man just went 90 yards on him.
Man, y'all melanin games before they played. I'm telling you, the Saints did the same thing. It can happen. This is an upside-down league. We said that about the Seattle Seahawks versus the Colts. Which one's going to go out? Remember, we were talking about which offense is better. We were like, oh, look at the Colts. What did the Colts do this week? After you went on record saying how the Colts, they finally figured it out. Andrew Luck is amazing this year. What did they go out there and do?
Jacksonville has great defensive personnel, and they finally showed up one weekend.
And Philadelphia has Super Bowl champion personnel.
Jalen Ramsey balled out of control. Philly doesn't have that type of personnel. They got a bunch of fat and satisfied guys on both sides of the ball. Zeke's about to climb.
Ever wonder how to get the hottest new sneakers, the ones that barely hit shelves? The answer is StockX, a revolutionary new marketplace for buying and selling 100% authentic sneakers, streetwear, watches, and handbags. Millions are already using StockX to find everything after it sells out. From the latest Yeezys to every retro Jordan to the hottest new streetwear from brands like Supreme, Bape, Palace, and Kith. StockX even allows users to buy and sell pre-owned, excellent condition luxury handbags and watches from brands like Louis Vuitton, Chanel, Gucci, Rolex, Omega, Tudor, and more. StockX gives you access to tons of historical price data so you can see exactly how much an item has sold for in the past and how much it's selling for now. Best of all, StockX has removed all the risk from buying and selling online. They provide total anonymity between buyer and seller. StockX is in the middle, so you never have to deal with the random buyer or seller again. And they have experts who verify every item, making sure everything you buy is 100% authentic. Never get burned by fakes again. Go to StockX.com/speak. StockX, now you know.
Time for a big story. Whitlock and Wiley, Tony Gonzalez and D'Angelo Hall are back. Let's move to college football, where Urban Meyer announced today that he will step down as head coach of Ohio State after the Rose Bowl. The decision didn't come as a huge surprise, with Meyer struggling with the effects of a cyst in his brain, not to mention the controversy surrounding his handling of the Zach Smith firing. Today, Meyer said he believes he won't coach again and talked about the timing of his decision.
I can't tell you the exact time. You know, walking off the stadium against our rival in that last game, things started to cross my mind. Going into Indianapolis started to cross my mind. I wanted to go longer. The thing that really started to make things, when recruits started asking me, will you be here for 4 or 5 years? Recruits I'm very close with. And this early signing date has put pressure all over this world. I mean, the college football world. Gene and I both felt we had the right guy. Not felt, we knew. And that's what made it now, the decision now.
All right, so that's Urban Meyer today. He also said, when asked directly if he would coach again, he said, that's a complicated decision. I think he said, I believe that I won't coach again. And so I believe he will coach again, and I believe he will coach again in the NFL. I think that he's accomplished everything you can accomplish in the college game. I think he was so beaten up by how he felt he was treated unfairly during the Zach Smith deal, that he's walking away from college football on top. They just won a Big Ten title. And I think within 12 months, he'll be an NFL head coach.
I advise against that. And I'm not even his doctor, but first, health is wealth. So forget about all this love and passion and itch for the game. If you're not healthy, what does it matter? So first, let's preserve your health and put you in the best positions, the least pressure-filled situations we can, but still give you your love for the game. What does that mean? Do what we do. Be a broadcaster. Do it again.
You got to be good at it.
That's objective, okay? Because, look, if you got the right agent, and I got a good agent, and I can hook him up. If you got the right agent, you can get put in a position where you can do the John Gruden plan, but finish it out. Make them come to you. Don't go game chasing. Sit there in the studio. Get $7 million plus and ride that out once. One, your health is going to be preserved because it's not about wins and losses. Two, make the game miss you and fully restore and repair your reputation. That did take some hits this year, regardless of what you thought about those incidents. So if I'm Urban Meyer, I'm satisfying my family. I'm staying still. I'm satisfying my doctors. I'm not in pressure-filled moments. And also, I'm still around the passion of the game. To me, that's the win-win of it all.
I mean, just relax. Just go home and relax. Urban has made enough money to take care of his family, his grandkids, his kids. It's not about money for him. It's about being around the game. But I think he needs to take a step back, just relax. When he left Florida, I didn't think he would come back. And then for him to come back in Ohio State, did 7 years there, and turned that program back into a real power on the national landscape. But the difference between college and the NFL, college you can recruit these five-star athletes every year. And Ohio State tends to get a lot of five-star athletes. Let's not get it confused. He is a great coach. He is a Hall of Fame coach. But without those players, and those five-star players, he is a better recruiter, I think, than actual football coach. Mm. And so in the National Football League, that's a different beast. You saw Nick Saban do the same thing. He was a great college coach. You get to the league, it's a little different. I can remember being in a locker room with Bobby Petrino, who was viewed as an offensive genius. And he his first thing when he gets there, he wants to know why he has to change in the same locker room as us or a locker room that we can see him. And one of the front office guys
maybe
said,
try,
well, one of the front office guys said, hey, coach, this ain't college. You know, that all that money that is endowed to the university, we got to pay these salaries. Mm. And so it's a different beast when you're dealing with professional athletes versus college kids. I don't quite know if the transition for Urban Meyer would be as successful as I think a lot of people think.
Yeah. First of all, you said if he goes into what we do, he gets $7 million a year? You make $7 million?
Yeah, I need to get on that plan.
He got to carry the one. He got to carry the one.
Well,
the John Gruden plan, though, the John Gruden was making $7 million.
Wow. But I'll piggyback on what you said right there. I don't think if he did go to the NFL, like you said, that's not a good transition. I don't think that works. Those guys that do that type of stuff, unconventional, even Gruden, who was out of the game. When you bring that, the trend right now is McVay, Nagy. This is why I don't think Josh McDaniels will work up there with Aaron Rodgers. Mm. Those guys are coming in with these egos. They have their offense. They know what they want to do. You need a young guy to come into the offense, I think, if that's just my opinion. And you see it doesn't work. He's too old. He's got this big name to come into the NFL ranks. I don't think that would work. I don't think it would work.
The guy's 54 years old. And what he's mastered is the ability to coach coaches. Again, he's not the X's and O's guru, but he knows how to coach his coaches. He knows how to pick his coaches. He knows how to develop his coaches. That can work in the NFL. Mm. A lot of coaches struggle. We all think it's about, oh, that he can't relate to the players. It's coaching your coaches. That's the key to being a successful. And again, when you talk about Nick Saban and why some of it didn't work when he got to the pros, coaching NFL coaches is different than being that bully coach of college guys. I don't think Urban Meyer has that problem. I think it would be a great move. And again, when you start talking about health, you know, happiness is a part of health.
Oh, yeah.
And if coaching and being involved with the game on that level is part of his happiness,
yeah, but you got to put your business hat on. One, the NFL and the
you do.
No. NFL and collegiate game in terms of pay, at the top level, they're all equal at the top level. Now, in terms of security, they're not equal. You got more security if you're talking about being at the collegiate level. So if I'm advising him, that's what I started off by saying. I advise him to either get into broadcasting or stay put, stay where you were. He doesn't want to stay still, okay? Get the broadcasting, you get the perks
without
all the
hurt. You gotta give him advice that makes sense for him. This guy is a super competitor that tried broadcasting and it didn't work, and he immediately went back into football. It's gotta work for him.
True.
This dude loves to compete, loves the X and O and do all the, you know, be the best coach. I think he heads back to the NFL. I think he heads back to football. And I think he'll be successful.
I love Cheetos. I ain't trying to be 300, though.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, D'Angelo. All right, time for Thinking Cap with Lock and Wiley. We're joined now by the host of Fair Game on FS1, Christine Leahy. Christine, welcome back. And Maricela Rios Faust, the CEO of Human Options, a nonprofit that assists the victims of domestic violence. We're going to discuss the Kareem Hunt situation. The former Chiefs running back went unclaimed on waivers and remains on the commissioner's exempt list after a video surfaced that showed Hunt shoving and kicking a woman in a Cleveland hotel back in February. Reportedly, the league is investigating the incident as a case of assault, not domestic violence. And since the video surfaced, two other assault allegations have emerged against Hunt, one by a man at a Kansas City nightclub in January who claimed Hunt was a part of a group that beat him so badly he was hospitalized, and another by a man at an Ohio resort in June who accused Hunt of punching him in the face. All right, Maricela, we've asked Christine and Maricela to join us because clearly it can't just be a discussion among men.
Yeah.
This issue that has troubled the NFL for quite some time over here the last few years is an issue where we need to broaden the discussion. And so I'm so glad both of you have decided to join us. And so I'll start with you, Maricela, and then we'll broaden it out. Should Kareem Hunt be allowed back into the NFL at some point?
He deserves an opportunity to earn his livelihood back, which is to become an NFL football player. But that will be based on the process of first tallying up all these incidents, getting all the facts, and then from there a rehabilitation process where Kareem Hunt must show his contrition, must show that he has learned from these incidents and properly addressed them. From that point forward, if he has deserved and earned a chance, yes. In a world of second, third, fourth, fifth chances, I think that a guy like Kareem Hunt must first address his construction in life before we try to rebuild his career on top of that. So deal with the underlying rage and anger issues that obviously are bottled up and have shown his ugly head several times, allegedly. And then we can talk about him being a football player.
Marcella, because you're the expert on this, I want to go to you next and ask you, would you have a problem if Kareem Hunt is allowed back in the NFL?
I agree with Marcellus. I think he needs to really work to restore his reputation and show and demonstrate that his behavior is changing. When you see multiple incidents, there's something underlying that needs to be addressed. It's once that gets addressed and he shows again he's on the right path and demonstrates behavior that is better, right? Instead of what we are seeing in the tapes today, I think then again, it could be revisited at that point. I think again, right now, he seems to be someone who really needs to focus on himself, to really focus on that rage that's in there and really that underlying power that he displays when he's in these incidents.
Christine, I know this is an issue you're very passionate about.
Very.
What's your take?
Well, listen, I agree with you both. I would like to see him come back only if he is able to address the situation and the underlying things that he has going on that clearly is creating this rage within him. And I hope that he takes the time away from football to really take that time to do that. And I do think that it's probably the worst thing for him to never play football again, because then he doesn't have the resources available to him to fix these things. So if the NFL can help him, that's great. My biggest issue with all of this is I really thought 5 years later, after the stuff with Ray Rice, that the NFL would have handled this better. And the fact that they didn't do a full-on investigation, when we look at the way that they've investigated other issues in the NFL that have nothing to do with assault or domestic violence, why can we not put the resources into doing this? 5 years later, it's like they never learned a thing.
I'm going to push back and defend the NFL, because I think that is a narrative that has bothered me about this, is that we're chastising the NFL as if they're a government organization. Mm-hmm.
They treat themselves like they are, though.
Well, again, just because that doesn't mean they are. I may treat myself like I'm Denzel Washington, but I'm not. And so the reality is that the criminal justice system can't figure this issue out as it relates to domestic violence. The police struggle with it. Prosecutors struggle with it. And we're sitting here shocked that the NFL doesn't struggle with it. That, and so one of the first things I asked you, Marcel, when we first met before the show was, there were no charges here. Are you surprised? Looking at this video, is this par for the course for the criminal justice system?
Yeah, I'm not surprised that there weren't charges pressed or charges brought forward. It's very difficult to prosecute, but that does not take away the seriousness of what happened. And I think, you know, when you think about whether legally something occurred, it's wrong, right? Whether it's illegal or not, that's bad behavior, and it should not be tolerated in any sense.
Jason, I actually agree with you. I think it's really hard, especially when there were no charges pressed, to then say that the NFL is supposed to do a better job. What my frustration was is that, again, it takes a video to come out for them to take this seriously, and that sets such a terrible, terrible precedent. It's already so hard for victims of domestic violence or assault to come forward, and then when we're now saying basically, hey, we got to see a video in order to take this seriously, you know, what's it going to take in the future? And it's just so hard for women to come forward. And listen, this isn't domestic violence, this is assault.
Right.
But just setting that precedent that a video is necessary makes it that much harder for victims to come forward.
But again, I hate to sound like a homer for the NFL, but my frustration would, if I was a woman, this woman in particular, this victim in particular, would be with the police. Again, they clearly didn't take it seriously. There was no arrest. There was no
charges. Okay, but why is TMZ able to get these
because
videos?
Because they pay money.
Yeah, the incentives. The NFL,
they built a business around
one it. NFL, absent of a video, which they did attempt to obtain, is sitting in a position of, okay, the team has discussed this with him, and the police report sounds like it's supporting him because no charges were brought. Mm-hmm. The NFL's in the position of, okay. Now, why does TMZ seem to always catch the NFL with their pants down? It's because they're incentivized to go out there and pay a security guard who makes $25,000 sure. per year, $100,000 minimum, yeah. to just leak this tape. Ooh. And that will continue to happen.
Let's not pretend, though, that the NFL cares a ton about this, though, because Tyreek Hill is on that team, and they knew exactly what he did, and he's still there.
But, or do you believe in second chances? Because if you believe in second chances, does Tyreek Hill deserve his second chance?
I absolutely do, but the Chiefs are letting go of Kareem Hunt because he lied, not because of what he did.
Well, and I don't have a problem with them making that decision, because if you can't trust the person you're working with, I wouldn't want to work with them. And yes, they are upset because they took the issue seriously, interviewed the guy, and had some questions, and he lied to them. Mm-hmm. And so without the assault, if he had lied to them about, you know, his birth date, he'd still be on the team. He lied to them about an assault of a woman, and so, yeah, they let him go. So I do think the assault plays a role in him being released. Marcella, we talked before the show about something about how do we use football and just any avenue we can to reteach masculinity mm-hmm. to men. And this is a conversation, as a father, Marcella, see, you're raising a young boy, and these are things I had to learn myself about what makes me a man and what is masculinity, and how do we teach young boys, rather than viewing, because I think what happens to too many young boys is we want to be intimidating when we enter a room. And I think we need to reteach boys that when you enter a room and a woman enters a room, the number one thing you want that woman to feel is safe. How do we make that the most masculine thing that you can be? How do we do that? Because I know your organization works with young people.
Yeah, we've been actually working with high school coaches, and they work with their team. And what they're really focused on is character building and character development and understanding what it means to be a healthy young boy and what that means. Aggression on the field for the sport is different than aggression in your private life, and really thinking about what it is that you stand for. And we have plenty of young boys that have actually come to learn what that means, right? The mask of masculinity, what that does to your persona, how you have to show up, you have to be aggressive, you have to be the strong person, and really being taking a step back and saying, you know what? You can be compassionate, right? You can be caring. There's so much more. You can show empathy for the person that you're with, and understanding that dynamic, understanding the power they have over young girls and over young women just by being male, right, and what that means, and understanding the impact that they could have becomes critically important. So we do that with young boys and teenagers, and what we found, honestly, is coaches, hands down, will get the message across, right, that it is not okay to be abusive. It is not okay. That is not what it means to be a young man, and if you're going to be on the team, you need to play this sport in a way that shows your character.
Now, to narrowly focus this and align it with Kareem Hunt in that video. Being a former player rep of 9 of my 10 years, I got to work closely with the FBI, closely with the director of security, which is usually off-duty policemen or retired policemen. And it's interesting when you're talking about the education of a man and masculinity. What I've learned from my experience of being a former rep is that the education is not full. What do I mean by that? We're told once you become a professional that, okay, your masculinity, you have to learn how to walk in situations and carry yourself in decorum and protect yourself. But we're taught in situations like this properly how not to instigate, properly how not to go out there and elevate a situation, but not properly how to diffuse moments like this. And a lot of times we will blame the outsiders, we'll blame the entourage, but a lot of times we're not told how to really just diffuse moments like this. Can you talk about a situation where you see that video and you see a guy who is in rage, how to diffuse that rage in that split second?
Yeah, I think it becomes much more difficult in that split second to diffuse. I think what people were probably seeing is far earlier it was escalating, right? That did, nobody goes from zero to 100 in that split second. So really identifying early on, what is it that's happening? What am I seeing that's troublesome, right? Like, hey, you need to maybe calm down a little bit. Let's remove ourselves from the situation. That becomes much more critical than in the split second. It's escalated beyond when anybody can fix something in that quick second. And that, I think that needs to be understood.
Marcellus, I would say this, and I'm glad Christine and Marcella are here, but I think the burden really resides with us in terms of men. And Marcella's, being from Compton, I'm from Indianapolis, we've shared each other's backgrounds. We know that there's a culture among men, particularly black boys, you can't disrespect me. Anytime, if I'm disrespected, I gotta go off and I can't allow that. And I think that's an inappropriate mindset that we have to correct. If someone calls me a name, I don't have to get all emotional and put down, oh, you disrespected me, and I have to react.
Yeah.
That's a problem we have as men that we need to be discussing and talking about constantly, about letting others control our emotions. That's where I see we have an issue. I even go, Jerry Hughes, the Bills defensive end, he wasn't involved in anything with a woman, but he got all upset because he felt a referee called him a name.
Yeah.
And when I was watching that yesterday, I was like, that referee's not in control of your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Him calling you a name doesn't mean you have to have an over-the-top reaction. And when I look at that Kareem Hunt video and I listen to the excuse of, well, she called me a name and she was all in my face, that's where I go back to provocation just isn't justification.
Well, I just want to say this. In clarity, I agree with you totally, but it's okay to be emotional. I think a lot of men hide behind the fact that if you're emotion, if you show emotion, you're weak. That's okay, but to be sensitive is something different. If I'm emotional, I am living in the ocean of my feelings. But if I'm sensitive, I let you dictate what those waves look like. I let what you say pierce through to me. So I think a lot of men out there, and especially these male celebrities and guys of high profile, need to understand the difference. And it's okay to show that vulnerability and weakness because it's actually a sign of strength.
I think I would agree with you. I think some of it is giving the opportunity to do that in a way that's productive, right?
Yeah.
And when you're bottling up and you're not productively expressing, you get this bottling up of emotions that just explode.
Christine, I want your reaction because I thought this through yesterday thinking about this segment. Mm-hmm. My belief that I look at and I see men too emotional and not in control of their emotions, and I see it as unproductive, unmanly, the whole, your reaction to that, just as a, hearing me say that.
Well, I think, oh gosh, if you look at this just across the board, with all the issues we have going on, the Me Too movement and everything, I do think that there is still, unfortunately, and I don't always think it's malicious, but I think that there's still an issue that little boys grow up to think of women just so differently, and we're not treated as equals, or they just think that they have to be this strong man and that women are weaker. And I don't think it's always malicious. It's just, unfortunately, still how the majority of our country still works, and we have to kind of make some progress with that in the way that we're raising our kids.
Let me follow up on you with that then,
sure.
Because I'm one of those guys that when it comes to physicality,
mm-hmm.
I do view women as weaker,
and
I have a responsibility to protect them because they are weaker.
Well, I don't think we ever say we need to be protected, right? Women can stand up for themselves, but you are right that physically there is a difference, which makes it all the more true that you just cannot ever lay your hands on a woman. And when I watched that video, I mean, it's still coming out what actually happened and what she may have said, and he just needs to, no matter what, don't lay your hands on a woman, and also know not to put yourself in that situation and realize that you've got a lot of eyes on you and you can't be doing that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no matter what, abuse is never okay.
Never.
What's your take on my position of, like, as men have a responsibility as the physically stronger sex, I think as it relates to physicality, we have to protect women.
I agree that men have a responsibility to protect women. I also agree, not just physically, but I think what's missing is the power, right? Men typically are in positions of power over women, and that when you are in a position of power over women, you need to make sure you equal the playing field, right? That's more important than physically protecting someone, but really thinking about, I am in a position of power, like both of you, and I am speaking to this issue, and I am saying it is not okay.
Yeah, it's interesting that if you look at the numbers, some of the recent reports say that this issue is 4X outside the NFL circle. So your neighbor is four times more likely to commit something of abuse and domestic violence than an NFL player. Obviously, the NFL being the ultimate team sport, having 1,800-plus players, in comparison to all other major sports, you're going to see more incidents from the NFL of negative and of positive if we want to keep that positive record. My advice to Kareem Hunt, because it's interesting being a former player, that you don't have to be Kareem Hunt to be in Kareem Hunt's position. And I've been there before. I've been in that position before where you can just see it. You can see gas over here and you can see fire over here, and they're close. Mm-hmm. But they haven't ignited just yet. But there are moments of truth in that interaction, in that altercation, that can help diffuse it. And there are many methods, and I just wish that there was something that we can actually give to these players in terms of information and education that could properly diffuse those. Because if we're trying to attack it saying, don't be in those situations, we will always have this problem. There has to be a better extinguisher of these moments.
You know, with young kids, one of the things that we have found is those real life examples and moments, right? It's like when we see young kids escalating, is being able to teach them, like, take a deep breath, stop. But it's what happens is that's classroom teaching, right? You're teaching in a classroom, and then real life happens. And real life happens, all your emotions take over. And so really in the moment is you need somebody who's going to come over to you and say, I think, you know, hey, you need to take a deep breath. But somebody, like your peers, peer-to-peer is really calling on each other. I think football and many sports being team sports, there's a team around you, and you have a team of people that on the field, you are working to succeed as a team, and you're working to score that goal, right? On the outside of the field, it's you need that same support, right? You need somebody who will also say, this is not cool, right? Like, you're not a bad person, but this is not cool. And that's what it takes. And it's not one time, it's not two times. Unfortunately, this is something that has to occur over and over and over again, because we did not get here by one incident, right? We did not get to this day just by something happening yesterday.
We gotta end, but I wanna make this final point. We'll end on this note. I'm gonna go back to the physical power deal. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I think it's important, because when you start talking about kids and how they understand power, it starts with physicality. Absolutely. They don't understand power within a corporation or in a workplace, but they do understand physical power. And if you could just get young boys to understand that dynamic and what their responsibility is, I think then when they become young adults, you have a better chance of them understanding their power in a workplace and everywhere else, and being responsible and restrained with how they use that power. Thank you both so much for joining us. All right, welcome back to the show, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by a guy fresh off a huge fight this weekend, Deontay Wilder, who retained his WBC heavyweight title after fighting Tyson Fury to a draw. Welcome, Deontay. Mm.
Thank you so much.
I tell you the first thing that blows me away, man, you look like a basketball player.
For real.
Mm. Like Kevin Durant's brother or something.
Small forward out here.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely small to be a heavyweight, you know. It was amazing that I came in at 212, but my official weigh-in right before the fight, I was at 209. I was very surprised I was that low in weight, and then Fury went up to 260. I'm like, this is the true story of David and Goliath.
All right, so I'm sure you believe you won the fight. Tell us why you believe you won the fight.
I believe I won the fight, you know, for one, that when you're coming in, you know, fighting a champion, you got to dominate the champion, you know. And I feel like I was the more aggressive fighter, and I provide the more effective punches, you know. And that count, I feel like it was too slow counted.
You think this count started late?
I know for sure 9 times out of 10 judges would have waved. When I hit that guy, I seen his eyes roll all the way in the back of his head, And I've seen many times where they wave fights off. You know, I got a brother named Malik Scott. He fought Derek Chisora, and he was on his knees at 9. And when he got up at 10, they waved it off, you know. But with this situation, it felt like it was a lot of delays in the count and different things like that, you know. But it makes great talk for the rematch. You know, you got one side saying he won, you got one side saying I won, and then you got in the middle saying it was a tie. So overall, I think we both win. The fans win as well too. And I thank God woke that guy up to get up for the second rematch, because I wouldn't have got no credit if I would have knocked him out. People already wrote him off and said, well, he was already, you know, 2 years or 31 months out of the sport. You know, he had to go through all this and this and that, you know, and if I would have knocked him out, then they would have said that. Being that day, he survived and went on, now, oh, he won and this and that. So the rematch is nothing going to be, nothing be said. I think this is going to the be all in all with the rematch, and I want to give it to him immediately.
Okay, now before we get to a rematch, we still got to talk about this one. Now, his eyes may have rolled back, but it's probably like, here I go again. You knocked him out twice, so the second time he's laying there, like, golly. But he did jump up to me within 10 seconds, minor detail. You had a game plan, you were talking it, and you're the champ. You walked in there and saw 6'9, 260, and something changed in that game plan, because it wasn't a dominant performance. I was sitting there at Jalapeno Pete's, shout out to Jalapeno Pete's, with my man Jason Whitlock, hydrating, amazed that Fury was in this fight. You knocked him down twice, but it seemed like he won most of the rounds. I'm one of the critics that thought you lost that in an even economic battlefield. But you think that you won. What changed from game plan to being in those ropes?
What changed to get, because my game plan definitely went out the window. Yeah. I abandoned the game plan for sure. I was definitely, it was a lot, when I walked into the arena, it was a lot of pressure on me. Just to see the outcome, and you know, boxing is not the number one sport here, you know, and it's always been the talk about the back in the days, how it were, and it just feels so much pressure just to bring the excitement back to America with the heavyweight division. I remember a time when no one knew who the heavyweight champion was here. So you got me, a guy just trying to bring it back and have all this on me. It was crazy for me. So my emotion got the best of me, and I was very anxious to get him out of there. I promised people I was going to knock him out, and that was my main goal. And that whole game plan of me just coming out, staying patient, doing the thing, what I had to do, went totally out the window. I kept going back to my corner and saying, why am I not, calm down. I kept calm down. What he was doing when he was bending down, I've seen that over and over and over again in training, in fights. I've knocked guys.
So you choked?
I wouldn't say choked.
Yeah, I wouldn't say choked.
I wouldn't say choked because I still was the more aggressor, and I still landed more effective punches, being that I was a smaller guy, you know? And so it wasn't no choke. It's no choke in me at all.
Oh, that range, okay. You know what
I'm saying? Ain't no choke in me.
You got an 8-foot range over here. You ain't out of harm's way.
I'm a puncher bag. I'm old and I'm a puncher bag. Don't swing.
No, but in reality, I love that. Look, he was your opponent in that fight. You guys are going to have the rematch. You got to have the rematch. Mm-hmm. But he also supports you and has your back in talking about the mega fight where we're all rooting for, you and Anthony Joshua. He's been saying that he thinks that Anthony Joshua is scared to fight you. What's your response to that?
We already known that. When we offered what Joshua asked for, Joshua asked for $50 million. And we offered that to him. Mm. We showed him the funds and everything. Me and Joshua had many private conversations about this. I turned them over to my people. They showed him insight of what was going on. So it was definitely real. It wasn't a fact. A thing of was the money real or not, because they know it was real. And then to go even deeper into it, I accepted $15 million flat fee for a fight of that magnitude. Mm. So I was ready and willing any given time and to go over to his country. We spent 4 years trying to get that, 4 months trying to get that fight together. And every time we accepted something, they moved the goalposts.
Oh, yeah.
Every time. It hurts us. And when you're dealing with a grown man that have kids, and this is how I support my family along with other things, but this is my ultimate thing, this is what I love, and you playing with a man, you know, it gets to the point where, like, y'all don't want to fight. So we move on. And what Fury said, of course, although I'm one of the smallest in the heavyweight division as a champion, but they have to respect me because my power, not only does it last in the first round, but it'll go all the way to the last second of the 12th round. And that's scary. I don't care how big you is and what your weight says. When you find a guy that you know you can be knocked out about, you know you can be knocked out by, you take that in consideration and you stay cautious.
Well, very just quick, do you think a fight with Joshua will happen?
I think it will happen. I think it needs to happen. It should happen. And if it don't happen, it'll be a shame in the heavyweight division.
And can we get the next fight in Las Vegas? Have you ever been to a heavyweight title fight in Las Vegas? It's the greatest thing in the world.
That is one of the places where I'm considering, as well as New York as well, too.
Mm. Bring it to Vegas, bro.
Vegas would be huge, being that it's such a big controversial yeah. talk around the world. Yeah. Vegas is a perfect place to have it at. So we'll see what happens, but I'm definitely going to get him the rematch. He deserves it. To settle this score once and for all, to see who really won. Everybody got so many opinions, and I respect everyone's opinion. You know, I'm not mad about anyone having an opinion, whether they're close to me or whether they're not, you know. It is what it is. It's an opinion.
Thank you, Deontay. Yeah. Really appreciate what you did this
week. No flat fees, though, in that Joshua fight. I ain't your agent, but we ain't doing no flat fees.
Man, come on with it.
We get some of that back end, homie.
All right, reminder that the twin brothers defend their titles in a huge night of championship fights on Fox. Jermall Charlo takes on Willie Monroe Jr., while Jermell Charlo defends his belt against Tony Harrison. PBC, December 22nd on Fox and the Fox Sports app. All right, welcome back to the show. Whitlock and Wiley, rejoined by D'Angelo Hall. Let's return to the NFL and the Pittsburgh Steelers, who will have to rely even more than usual on Big Ben this week. With James Conner out with an ankle injury, Pittsburgh has suffered two bad losses in a row and has the worst turnover differential of any team currently in the playoff field. Now the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette says it's time for Mike Tomlin to demand a more responsible offense. Listen, I read this story in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and I think they got it all wrong. And just like I told y'all yesterday, they need to demand that Big Ben be more responsible with the football. Big Ben has installed his buddy, Fichtner, as the offensive coordinator. This offense is out of control and not balanced because of Big Ben, not Tomlin, in my opinion. Big Ben's got the power in this relationship. He ran off Haley, got his boy as OC, and they throw the ball too much.
Totally agree with you. And I'm glad because I thought this was going to turn into a Mike Tomlin discussion.
Did you listen to yesterday's show when I clowned you about Big Ben?
Yeah, I did, but then when
he's
I saw
a bad leader.
I saw Tomlin in the headline, and I was like, I hope they didn't spray my boy.
My man, Mike T.
Love Mike T. Of all active coaches, second highest win percentage behind Belichick. Also, respected what he's doing with this team. Look, Ben Roethlisberger, this is the simple over Ben Roethlisberger right now. When your skills start to erode, all that playmaking, dancing in the pocket, you know what you start to do? Roll the dice a little more. And he's rolling the dice a little more, and he's winning some, and he's losing some in terms of going out there and being accurate with the football. But all things said, I respect that Mike Tomlin has control on this team. I have one fun fact for everyone out there. I did my homework last night. If you look at who's the most complete team in the NFL, a lot of people would say the Rams, or you would eat
Houston Texans.
Texans.
Yeah, New England.
Some people will go to the Chargers if they're smart and look at them both sides of the ball. Fifth ranked on offense, eighth on defense. You know the most balanced team in terms of rankings are? It's actually the Pittsburgh Steelers. So Mike Tomlin should be exempt from this. Have a candid conversation with Ben. You ain't got to be the gunslinger playmaker all the time. But it is Big Ben. Be more careful with the ball.
Yeah, and part of him having that gunslinger mentality is because of the offensive coordinator, Randy Fichtner, like you said. He was a guy who was Ben's quarterback coach for the past 8 years. And you know, you sat in that room. How many times have we vented to our position coaches like, man, I wish the coordinator called more of this type of defense or this type of play call that we like?
Yep.
Now when your coach becomes the OC or the DC, he's starting to listen to you. Even though you're probably not screaming and yelling at him to do those things, he knows Ben was kind of, hey, man, we're handing the ball off too much. I want to throw the ball a little more. And it's been to his detriment because, like you said, they don't need to throw the ball that much. They have to balance it out. Take the ball out of Ben's hands. That way that this team won't have the ability to turn the ball over as much as they
have. I love how you pointed out that dynamic, because this is how it really works, and it works in all workplaces around the world. If you help me get this job, and he went to bat for him and said, you know, you could get Haley out of here, and I got my boy ready.
Yeah, he's ready.
Guess what? That is going to be paid forward forevermore. Like, you're never going to forget that you took care of me in those moments, and that seems like some of that is happening now.
I wish that I had a machine that could take us back in time, and we could go back to the future. Because I tried to tell y'all this yesterday. Big Ben's a bad leader. He's done installed his boy. He done installed his boy as the OC, and the team is out of control. I've been telling you, and I love Big Ben. He's the problem.
That's not bad leadership that your boy is taking care of you or listening to you and saying, I'm going to give you what you like. Every system is trying to curtail their play calling around your skill set. His skill set is forever changing. Big Ben in his head, between the ears, is still going out there, extended plays 10 seconds. In reality, it's not the same.
He needs to hand the ball off more.
Yeah, he does. Yep.
Throw less.
Hand the ball off.
Thank you. I told y'all that yesterday. Thank you, Dan.
There you go.
It's time for Antisocial,
my
favorite segment.
Fire, fire.
Darnell Smith, our social media manager, is here to tell us what's popping in those Twitter streets.
Look at that. Oh. Got on that bleach burgundy. That ain't Ball State colors.
That's that strawberry with a K. Strawberry.
Mike New's going to be at Warren Central High School this Thursday, Darnell. Breaking a little news here.
Who's it?
Mike New, Ball State's head football coach.
Oh, there you go.
Ball State of Warren United, yeah.
All right.
What's popping in them streets?
4-7, Ball State. Go get it, Mike.
Anyway, let's start with Monday Night Football.
4-8, actually.
Where backup Colt McCoy went out with a broken leg. So third stringer Mark Sanchez came in and looked like Mark Sanchez when the Redskins signed him 3 weeks ago. Twitter was upset that Colin Kaepernick didn't get the job. Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise that they're still pushing for him to get another chance. Even former NFL team exec Joe Banner got in on the act, tweeting, "The team leaders in Washington should be in Bruce Allen's office this morning for a discussion. The message should be that you can't expect us to continue to risk our health and well-being when you're keeping a player who can help us win out of the building for political reasons." Now, Jay Gruden already shot this down, but this is an interesting angle. We all know Twitter wants to see Cap back in the league. But do you think Redskins players should demand they bring in Cap?
I don't even know if I got enough Twitter off for this, and I like Joe Banner. I like his Twitter feed.
If you
I'm gonna wear out the whole camp. Oh, they're keeping out this great quarterback that can help us win, and we could win out and win our division if Kaepernick were here. The man won 2 games the last time he was in the league 2 years ago. He's not a solution. He's a stopgap quarterback, virtually no better than Mark Sanchez. He's been out of the league for 2 years. Joe Banner knows damn well you're not bringing in some guy off the street that's been sitting down for 2 years and he's going to win games for you. Who? What quarterback's done that?
Are you finished?
I'm done.
Or are you done?
I'm done.
Are you finished or are you done?
I'm done.
Give me some of that mist over here because I'm about to hit you with this. Damn it, if they don't bring in Kaepernick right now, look. Headline, Mark Sanchez starts. Okay, that's fine. You don't want to bring in Kaepernick. Is Kaepernick worthy of being Mark Sanchez's backup? Even you, Jason Whitlock, have to understand that.
Know your personnel.
What you mean by personnel?
Dan Snyder's the owner of that team. He's right in lockstep with Jerry Jones on the national anthem issue. It ain't happening.
Oh, I get it's not happening to the politics, but if I'm a player and I see Mark Sanchez out there doing this, I'm like, oh, hell no. I know where my faith is
have
going.
Have you seen Kaepernick's wind up? I love Kaepernick when he first got into the league, but he never developed his skills fully. Jim Harbaugh carried him. Y'all need to quit
he
this.
He had skills to develop. What has Sanchez done? You talking about Kaepernick only won 2 games. Sanchez won 0. He is not good. And if he's not good enough to be Sanchez, please let him be your backup. Come on, be
man, it's like,
come on, Whitlock. Whitlock, stop.
Come on, Lock.
That's hate now.
Look.
We have entered the realm of hate.
No,
if we don't let Kaepernick be Sanchez's backup.
Listen.
Backup?
The Seattle Seahawks wanted to sign Kaepernick. They did. He didn't like the money. What do you think the Redskins are paying Mark Sanchez? Do you think Kaepernick would accept that kind of money? He's delusional because y'all stay on Twitter.
What do you mean y'all?
Convincing this dude that he's Joe Namath and Joe Montana and Steve Young all rolled into one. He's not. There was NFL minimum money or $1 or $2 million out there for him to be a backup quarterback. He wouldn't take it. This is on Cap. Y'all need to quit.
Okay, I get all that, but still extend the invitation, extend the hand. What you mean, y'all, you people? What you talking about?
The Baltimore Ravens extended an invitation. Ray Lewis,
well, we want them to keep coming.
And you know what Ness Nitty did?
What?
She called him racist. People don't want to deal with that kind of BS.
Once again, we are in alignment on that conversation. But if I'm a player, would I want Kaepernick on my team versus
Mark Sanchez? If I'm the owner and I sign the check, if I'm the coach and the guy, and now every day I got to come up and be talking about police brutality and all this other stuff that Cap brings to the table, that Mark Sanchez doesn't, the issue is far more complicated than this garbage that keeps getting spread on Twitter. And the reason why I get so upset about it is because they keep trying to bring down football and try to define it as this racist sport and all. And football is not, just like I tweeted out earlier today, it's the underground railroad for black men. So many of me and my friends lifted up and out because of football, and they keep trying to denigrate this sport, and it irritates and pisses me off.
You just couldn't wait to say all that Kaepernick.
I couldn't wait.
You just couldn't wait to get Kaepernick all mixed up with all that. Man, Twitter, put Cap on the damn team. We figure out everything else later. Look, Sanchez could be quiet and sorry. I'd rather take loud and good, and I'll take me some Kaepernick.
Loud and good.
Loud and good.
First of all, the man don't talk. First of all, so he ain't loud. He kneels. So he ain't remotely loud.
The noise that comes with
it. The noise that comes with it. And good is a long time ago.
Sanchez or Kaepernick? Who's better?
Right now?
What you got, Darnell?
I don't know.
Ain't no way he could answer that.
All right, man. We're going to go already to first things first this morning.
Please.
Our buddy and Ohio State alum, Chris Carter, reacted to the Urban Meyer news. Take a listen.
Ohio State will survive. We've been playing football 125 years. We will survive. We got great kids there. We got a good coaching staff there. Ryan Day, and Urban and I have been going over this when he took over when Urban was suspended. Urban thinks he's the best offensive coordinator he's ever had. Now, he's got three or four guys out there, Dan Mullins, Tom Herman, them. These guys are running Florida, Texas. He said Ryan Day is even better than them.
All right, now, Ohio State has already locked up Ryan Day to a five-year deal. You think the Buckeyes keep it rolling?
I think Chris Carter sounds like me talking about Ball State.
A little invested.
They can install Darnell as head coach, and I'll be like, Darnell's the best damn defensive coordinator. And
that would be factual, though.
Coach we ever had. Look, is Ryan Day? I don't know. I got to see some proof in the pudding before I'm ready to hop there. I ain't mad at it.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it either. The thing about it is that they're going to have a hiccup. You have to have a hiccup because in recruiting, in terms of those commitments, and they already said that it was a little slow and stagnant in part because of the cloud around Urban Meyer. Would he come back or not? I don't think that they continue where they are right now, right on the edge of a national playoff conversation, but they'll be back. They're Ohio State, man. They're one of the premier
programs. Here's what they think. They think he's Lincoln Riley. You know, Bob Stoops stepped down. Yeah. Lincoln Riley came in, kept I got to see some more proof before I'm ready to go there. Urban Meyer is one of the, you know, two or three best coaches in college football.
Yep.
He's right behind Nick Saban. He's the number two coach in college football. There will be a drop-off from Ryan Day.
Yeah, I think
this,
so.
I don't think this is going to be as smooth as Lincoln Riley taking over for Oklahoma. All right, let me cool off.
Let me cool off. Yeah, Twitter off all that. Here it is. Underground Railroad.
Thank you, Darnell.
Win a game, damn it.
All right, welcome back to the show. It's time for our approval ratings for Philadelphia Eagles head coach Doug Peterson. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us with our approval ratings.
Four!
You Tiger Woods caddy now?
Tiger Woods. Whatever, man. Y'all sitting up here, y'all got jokes, man.
Yep.
I'm going to tell you little young people something. I'm going to admit when I'm wrong. I didn't pay attention on the app. All I did was saw greens, caddy, clubs and 18 holes.
I have no idea what that was.
Oh, I do. You would have got us all.
But listen, we're going to play our highlight from our discussion earlier about Doug Peterson and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Ooh, what kind of caddy?
The Philadelphia Eagles transformed themselves into the Philadelphia Eagles. Can you blame them? They won a Super Bowl with their backup quarterback. Peterson and his players fell in love with themselves.
They came back and they weren't full of themselves. Other teams were fully motivated against them. Remember, this is the underdog team that won the Super Bowl. So now everyone has woke up to the fact that you are now the champs and we are coming fully motivated, full throttle at your head.
Mm.
Broke that down.
That was our conversation earlier. Look, Philadelphia talking all that smack all offseason. It blew up in their face. Ooh. Surely to God, you know I'm right, Uncle Jimmy.
You win the Super Bowl, you ain't supposed to talk smack.
Is that?
No. No, you're not.
You win the Super Bowl, you ain't supposed to talk smack.
You're saying that? You agree with that? No way.
Okay, Jason. Okay. Let me explain. Let me explain something.
Get some.
I got 5 rings. Bill Belichick got 5 rings. I've been married 5 times. I talk stuff at each one of my weddings. Talk stuff. You know which one I talk the most about? My first one. My first ex-wife was Della Reese's little sister.
Oh.
Key word in that statement. Little. Because you know how I roll.
I heard.
You understand what I'm saying? I done told you.
I heard.
You know what I drive.
Patty, you were
just And baby girl, what is she about? Man, she about 290, 295.
Fine. On that Whitlock.
Fine. Had that Indian hair. You know what I'm saying? Choir director. Led what? The choir. So you know she can sing.
Yeah.
Man, she was the choir director for the Black Bottom Pentecostal First Methodist Church of God in Christ.
Black Bottom, what Black Bottom, what is that?
So we bought you the books and sent you to school, and all you did was ate the covers, huh, Jason? Black Bottom is a neighborhood where Della Reese and her family was raised up, Jason.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
All right, my bad.
It's called history, okay?
I thought it was some knockoff Red Bottom.
You could go look it up if you want to, okay?
We will.
Okay?
Yes,
that might be the reason you don't know nothing about the Eagles.
Ooh.
Because you ain't ever won or done nothing that you could really talk about.
Shots.
Now, me, myself, back in the 1950s, when I first met the Reese sisters. Marcellus, let me tell you something. When I first met the Reese sisters, they was bigger than the Kardashians. You understand what I'm saying?
No.
And when I first walked in, I looked at them, boy, and I'm, you know, I was casket clean when I seen them. And I looked at them, boy, and I was like, I like, Uncle Jimmy's on the main line. Come tell him what you want. Uncle Jimmy's on the main line. I'm like, please believe me, sweetie, I got enough to feed the needy if you tell me what you want.
So you Biggie Smalls.
Yeah,
I'm just
right.
A Biggie Draws, whatever you want to call me. She loved me, you understand what I'm saying? She loved us and me, and I kept talking all the way to the end.
Four more wives later, can though. I mean, where we at?
Can we get to the approval ratings?
Uncle Jimmy's on the main line.
You're at 5 lines.
You know you're going to
tell
hell for that.
Tell him what you want.
My approval rating for Doug Peterson, job performance 11, all-time greatness 17, character 19, authenticity 19, a total of 66. Not coaching that well this year. His job performance taking a big hit.
Not coaching that well. A Super Bowl hangover, if you want to call it. And a team that's going out there now, one game behind the division leader. Not coaching that well. I give him a little more credit than that, Jason. We're like 14. All-time greatness. I agree with you right there. Did some scandal happen in his character and authenticity that you got him in the teens and not in the 20s?
I think he gets too much credit for riding the coattails of Andy Reid, Frank Wright, and DeFilippo. And so, again, when you look, they had DeFilippo and Frank Wright on the staff last year. The offense was a lot better. I think he gets a lot of credit for other people's work.
I think he gets a lot of respect for being Mr. Fourth Down, Mr. Let's go out there and take risk, and let's take an underdog team that some people don't think, they didn't even think was that talented, all the way to Super Bowl championship. Give him respect. Character and authenticity high for him. I love
Jesus. You got him at a 77, an all-star. I disagree with that.
He's not a GOAT.